At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase. Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, and bees, in a podcast divided by fear, two hosts set out on a journey to talk about what nobody else will because nobody else can. This is Eat, Sleep, Elite, the podcast you've been waiting for this summer.
No, I like it.
I was thinking about that last night.
Would
I was like,
alive.
And I was like, I've got this trailer voice that I've done for years as a bit, you know, just to my friends. And it used to be funny. And I don't, people haven't laughed at it in years, though. You know what I mean? So I was like, is this still funny?
In a world.
Turns out it is. That's a joke I stole from an episode of, I think, Graham Norton, where Will Smith and Ryan Reynolds were on. And Ryan Reynolds does a trailer voice. If you can't tell, I'm fucking all high on some Ryan Reynolds energy this week because we saw Deadpool and Wolverine.
Speaking of Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. We've been high on that Deadpool and Wolverine energy. If you have not, check out our review of that over on ESC Fantasy. It's our fantasy review podcast where we talk about TV, movies. We're going to be talking about books soon. Eventually, probably, honestly, expand that out to other stuff because you just never know. Fantasy is such a broad, you know, swath of content that you can really get a lot about out of that. But I don't know what the about was in there, but you can get a lot out of that. But, you know, but either way, yeah. So we have our Deadpool and Wolverine. How is that doing so far? Have people been checking that out, Charlie?
Pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
I think a lot of people are wanting to engage in some Deadpool activity.
That sounds a little suspect when you put it like that, but, you know, I'll just
blame them.
Something I did want to talk about, actually, that I'm surprised by. So, first of all, I have been talking to you about this. I've been seeing people have been critical about certain things in that movie that I'm a little surprised by. I think that's just a side effect of how critical people are of the MCU in general now.
Definitely.
But it's surprising to me. Like, they nitpick the smallest things now in these MCU movies, and this is a good one, and people are still finding flaws in it. And I'm like, can't we just be happy that we got a good movie?
It is unfortunate. You know? A lot of nitpicking in the MCU, it does come across, especially online, as pretentious, and it's a fucking dangerous line you really don't want to be threading. I don't want to have that image, and I know what you mean. I've seen certain
I strive to not sound like that all the time.
100%.
The only thing I try to sound like, and maybe this makes me come off a little pompous sometimes, is intellectual, because I do like to sound intelligent when I talk about things that I think are trying to be intelligent, you know? Like, when you hear me talk about House of the Dragon, yeah, let me tell me what the Spice Beer episode's coming, you know? I'm the Digital Duke, also known as the Digital Phantom, at Bane Duke here, BaneDuke on Twitter. I'm here with at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A on Twitter. This is at Eat Sleep Elite, as I said. Those are our Twitter handles that you can follow us on. Make sure you follow in or subscribe, whatever podcast platform you happen to be on. Yeah, like I said, check out the Fantasy Pods. We have our full Acolyte review out there. We have our The Boys review out there. We have the 99.9% of our House of the Dragon review is out there. Last episode this Sunday, so be fucking hyped for that. And yeah, we'll get into wrestling here in a second. But I mean, shit, Charlie, we got fucking nothing coming up after this week. We're just going to be just wrestling podcasters again. What the fuck? Like,
we're going to be wrestlers. Fuck it.
Nah, I can't wrestle. I'll get fucking injured as soon as I see.
Neck bump, dead.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I'm going to look in Minoru Suzuki's direction and his glare is going to give me a fucking torn calf. You know what I mean? Like, but anyway, you know, that being said, I guess let's just get into it. I mean, we usually obviously start off with our favorites and stuff like that. And I believe you're going first this week, Charlie. But I guess, you know, I'm going to do something I don't normally do. Like, just like we kind of do this on this show sometimes, but like, I've been really enjoying this aspect of the other shows, just like overall thoughts on the week of wrestling, because it was pretty wet. Like, it had some width to it. It was pretty wide.
Oh my god.
Wrestling quality up, I would say, overall.
This is a long week.
Definitely a long week. But I would say, you know, because I guess these are my overall thoughts. I guess my last thing I would add in there is I think I think some correct choices were made this week, though I don't know about the execution of some of them.
Yeah, I think we have another consistently good Dynamite. I don't know if it's 3-10. Like, the last two Dynamites, I would give a legit 10 out of 10. And while I do think in this we had a legit 10 out of 10 match, it is a match that we've come to expect. So, you know, for what it is, I think that's three big hitter Dynamites in a row, which has been a really good, consistent year of Dynamites. Outside of, like, a couple week shows we had in June that we, you know, called out then, it's like, it's been a consistent, pretty consistent Dynamites this year. We had another useless Battle of the Belts. We had some, you know, the Ring of Honor pay-per-view that was honestly nothing but quality, it feels like. With, again, we had some of the big high-quality women's matches. So it's really cool to see what Ring of Honor's become in terms of the women and how they're being featured. You know?
It's funny because, and this is a kind of proof that even a place like Ring of Honor, if you put in the work, it can result in really good things for you and lots of other people. Ring of Honor has a bank. I mean, let's be honest, the women get way more time and way more interesting stuff to do in Ring of 100%. Honor than the men do at this point. So it's almost like a women's based promotion to an extent, just especially, excuse me. And I think that's everything to do with who is the face of Ring of Honor right now. And it's Athena and it's not even close. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
and the fact that now our tapings are at this esports arena. Going forward, I hope this means for the next like 8 weeks or so, we can really have a focused Ring of Honor television weekly product that we can get into and hope next week is going to be the first one. Well, next week on our show, but in 2 days time or today, whenever you guys are listening to this, it'll be that first episode of the new taping. So yeah, they've already done a couple. So I really hope
the one guy watching this 2 weeks from now, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like you were dead wrong, Buster. But yeah, let's get into my favorite, and, you know, we'll take kind of a bit of the easy route. We'll go with the Blood and Guts match, right? Right off the bat, I love that all of these matches, while they have the same stipulation, they all have a different feel to them, right? And this Blood and Guts felt nothing like the last one. I love starting off with our AEW self-proclaimed pillars of Jack Perry and Darby Allin. Getting Darby Allin in this match was very, very important because this is a future world champion. I feel very confident in that more than ever.
I think he could be our next contender for the world championship, potentially.
Yeah, and depending on who wins it at All In, he could be a contestant to win this thing at, where's that being defended? In New York. Whether it's against Danielson or whether it's against Swerve, I'm cool with that. They had a really good start. The Young Bucks, of course, cheesed the favoritism, so they had the advantage. Nicholas Jackson came out second, followed by Mark Briscoe, followed by Matthew Jackson, followed by Anthony Bowens. And then Okada came in. I don't know Okada's history in these styles of matches, but I felt like he was unfortunately taking things a little bit too soft. It did stick out a little bit. And then followed by Max Caster, when we were supposed to have Hangman, he didn't arrive. Swerve hits, and of course Hangman and Swerve, they had a little escapade on the outside. That being said, I thought everyone looked strong in this match and had a purpose in this match outside of Max Caster. He was the only one that didn't really get any of the big spots. Even Bowens took the massive table bump outside when Bowens had plenty of running wild opportunities. Every single person, when they hit the ring, including Okada, they all had big, big spots, and Caster's was literally dinking on someone with the mic. And I do feel like it's important to kind of call this out a little bit because he is the only person in this match that we were probably a little worried about, and he's the only one that didn't stick out. So it feels like a missed opportunity for him. I don't know who makes that call. I'm assuming they all get opportunities to fucking do some crazy shit.
I mean, like, I just don't know. You know, it's like, I think it comes down to, and maybe this is me being a little bit harsh here, but I think it's just like when you're making a match like this, right? When you're designing the, I guess we'll just call them the gimmick spots, right? Like with all the little bits and the gimmicks, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of have to have something that plays into it. Otherwise, you're just doing the same thing everyone's already done, right? Which is what you see a lot in these matches, right? It's not a Darby hitting a coffin drop off the cage or Darby hitting a coffin drop. It's Darby hitting a coffin drop while he's hanging off the top of the cage and doing it through a table in the center of the ring. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yep.
It's you have to have the moveset to make it work in this match and then be able to take it up to 11, you know, and, you know, and I don't know if Max's moveset is really conducive to that necessarily. Could have been spots for him, though. He could have hit a mic drop through a table. He could have hit, they could have done something like with like a sledgehammer, with like instead of doing the normal, like, you know, ball busting spot, he'd be smashing somebody in the balls with a sledgehammer. You know what I mean? Like,
his most,
they could have done stuff with this guy.
Tax in the mouth. That was it. That's kind of,
that was pretty good.
Biggest moment.
They gave him that spot, and that's a pretty good spot to give him.
And that's working as him being the rapper, you know, him being the voice, a mouth, if you just watched
Deadpool. He was definitely more into taking the bumps, though, than he was to giving them, you know what I mean? Like, which I thought was interesting. I mean, maybe that was the plan, because he's always talking so much shit that maybe everyone wouldn't just want to, you know, take him out quickly. But, you know, I don't think it was, like, bad. He just wasn't, like, as, it wasn't, like, everyone else, like you said, had
It's night and day with him and Mark Briscoe, and they're on the same team. I thought Mark Briscoe was fucking incredible in this match. And I wasn't I was expecting Jack Perry. I was expecting the Young Bucks, and I was expecting Darby Allin to look incredible. And obviously, our two world champions in Swerve and Hangman. But Mark Briscoe, I was like, okay, I'll take what we can get. I thought he looked fucking phenomenal in this match. Every single time he was doing big moments, he got the crowd involved too. And yeah. Unfortunately, Max was the one that didn't get it. So it came down to the baby faces tying everyone up, essentially in different spots, handcuffing them, right? And they had to force them to quit. Jack Perry wasn't going to quit. He was lit on fire at one of the last big gimmick matches, right? This kid's not going to quit. And it ended up being Matthew Jackson took the bullet for him. So Matthew quit because he didn't want to see Darby killed, essentially.
We should have Jericho throw a fireball at Jack Perry and him just eat it at some point.
My God, if he no-sold the fireball, that would be fucking awesome. But yeah, I think if you are into your violent, long matches, I didn't even watch this match live. I watched it back. We actually watched it together. And it's just like, if you're into these kind of matches, it's a good time to just flip it on. It's 50 minutes of fun. Like, you know what you're getting. Straight up, you know what you're getting with this kind of match. It was a flat build. This was by far the weakest build we've had to one of these matches that I can remember. And yet the match still delivered. So,
It's so weird because, again, like you said, the term night and day. That's what I would describe as the difference between the build to this and the build to Anarchy in the Arena. The build to Anarchy in the Arena felt like the end-all, be-all of the feud. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Whereas this kind of just felt like we're doing a little coda to it, you know? We got to make sure we get these matches in. Swerve should have probably been involved, so let's involve him now. But obviously, Swerve had bigger fucking fish to fry with fucking Lord Willard, you know? So he did a little busy, you know?
And everything I was reading, it pushed good tickets when they got everyone in the match. So, you know, it worked, yes. I think, for the live crowd.
I guess let's address the chair spot. We're not going to actually, like, acknowledge the fucking talk online because fuck that. It's really stupid, the discourse. But I will say this. I still don't love the way QT Marshall handles these situations. He basically treats wrestling fans like they're idiots, because they are, but like, I've never liked that mentality from wrestlers. Like, yeah, I get it, you just view us as a mark, but like, you don't have to be a dick about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I deleted my tweets that I tweeted about it, but like, basically what my opinion came down to was this. Every now and then I get reminded that wrestlers don't like their fans that much, even the ones that they actually would like if they met, you know what I mean? Like, the ones that when they do interact with, they have a good time. They don't like them. They just view them as an opportunity to make money. And that is kind of sad to me, but it's entirely the fault of the wrestling community for making wrestlers think this way. Because I feel like for somebody like QT, I feel like his passion for this business was killed years ago by people like that that never gave him a chance, you know? So, but it does suck to see that, because like, when you're not a person that, it's just seeing him constantly say to people, you haven't earned the right to ask me questions about that spot, is just so fucking dismissive of your fan base. I just don't understand it, you know? Like, whether people are wrong or right, that's such a shitty attitude to have, you know? That's the only thing I want to talk about. Fuck the actual situation. I don't think Jack Perry... Now, do I think Jack Perry would be stupid enough to take that spot? 100%. He took a goddamn real glass spot after everyone and their fucking brother told him not to. This guy's an idiot. But that doesn't mean that he's necessarily that much of an idiot. Especially, I mean, he saw what happened to Cody, I'm sure. You know, like...
Yeah.
But I also am still skeptical about the whole safe chair shots thing. I don't buy that, but it's also like, it's not really my fucking gripe here. You know what I mean? Like,
Look, the way I view this, if they tell us they've gimmicked it, and QT did, and so did, I believe, Sean Ross Sapp reported it, and everyone says, well, you can't do that. You can't gimmick it. Well, I'm just going to choose to believe whatever that they did, the reason that they sent out a press release is because they don't want their guys getting vertigo for months on end. They don't want Jack Perry to have fucking long-term conditions from this. So they did gimmick it, and they found a way. I don't think they shaved it down. Like, I know that the whole big online thing was the guy was, you know, showing the chair. He's like, you can't shave this down. The chair didn't look normal to me. Like I said, I don't really know the ins and outs and how they gimmick stuff. But I'm sure someone like Dax, this is why I wish we had his fucking podcast still. He'd be able to explain.
Oh, Dax would not address this. This is the kind of thing Dax wouldn't address. 100%.
No, but he would explain. He would show everyone exactly how stuff like that is gimmicked. And that was the reason people got on him, is because he would talk about how certain things he did, whether it was the...
Oh, and he used to get mad when people would make him do it, too. He'd be mad when there would be so much discourse that he felt like he had to come out and say something. You know,
It was a spot with... God, oh my God. It's like when you have a broken foot. What are those called? It's like a crutch. There was a spot with a crutch where someone took it to the head. And Dax was talking about how, he didn't really fucking get hit by a real one, people. And it was something along those lines. And I think it was Dax that took the bump. I don't remember. I just remember it had to do with a crutch. And he called it the crutch gimmick. He called it some type of gimmick. It wasn't a crutch gimmick. And he's like, oh my God, my terminology's gone too far. When he's retired, that podcast will be brilliant. That's all I know.
Oh, 100%. I mean, especially if he doesn't have Cash as like a weekly guest or like every now and then, like kind of like how like Christian Edge did back in the day. But I mean, I will say this. I don't really care about the gimmicking of the chair. I'm more concerned with the way QT treats the fans when they fucking ask questions about it. That was so startling to me because I see it every time something like this happens. Yeah. And nobody ever acknowledges it. And it's so weird to me because this is supposed to be one of our guys, you know? Like,
there's a difference between standing up to trying to back the company and coming across as a total fucking dick while doing it.
No, straight up. Like, and like, I saw other people doing, like, being like, but like, okay, I get that we're not in the business, but like, does that mean you have to just straight dismiss us? And he was basically like, yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if you view it as like a you versus us thing, then you're never going to be successful,
buddy. Tie it back to what
we were
talking about at the beginning of the show. When you make comments like that, it really makes QT look fucking pretentious and pompous. Like, it's unfortunate, but...
It's him, and you know who else? I was like the person that made me realize this about wrestlers. It was CM Punk. It was interviews with CM Punk, because he talks the same way, and several other wrestlers do. I much prefer people like Adam Cole, who just are honest about the business, you know? Like...
Yeah,
because Adam Cole isn't going to sit here and fucking sell you a bag of fucking false goods. He's going to give you what he thinks is good. If you don't like it, that's on you. But if he's going to give you what he thinks is good, and he's not going to, and then if you ask him a question about it, he might answer it, but he might not. He might choose to just not answer it, you know, like, but he'll explain to you why. And it's not going to be because you're not a fucking wrestler. I've never understood that mentality. I get it's this fucking special little thing that all these, you know, guys do, and then no one else can do it, you know, but... Like, I don't know, man, that whole fucking, like, why are we bringing, like, people talk about tribalism in wrestling. You know where it comes from. It comes from fucking wrestling, because wrestling is also like that. Because people in wrestling have their little fucking tribes, you know? And if you're not a part of their tribe, guess what? You don't get to know the secrets, brother. Even though on every fucking podcast they'll ever go on for 3 years, they'll reveal every secret. But, you know, that's because I need the money now, brother. So, yeah, I just wanted to address that part
of it. Doesn't work for me, brother.
Because, like, you know, I don't even care about the fucking chair. If Jack Perry is truly stupid enough to do that, then he deserves the repercussions. You know what I mean? That's how I feel.
To take a real fucking chair at Darby Allin's full strength, GG's.
Yeah, like, seriously. Like, if you're more power to him at that point. He's a stronger man than me and definitely won't have that long of a career. So it's not like we'll have to watch him do it for that long.
Like, even with Hoodfoot, one of the indie wrestlers right now talking about how he gets the vertigo and he gets it for months on end because of unprotected chair shots.
Yep.
They don't gimmick them on the indies. If Jack's hearing that and he still doesn't give a fuck, well, then there's no stopping him.
No, so, I mean, and I don't think he's that stupid. So, you know, I don't think he was stupid enough to do the glass thing. I think the glass thing was even probably gimmicked, if I had to guess. You know what I mean? Like, because I would imagine
that
he's not just an idiot. Now, is there any way to protect yourself from glass? Really? Probably not. But to be fair, he got lucky in the specific spot I'm thinking of where he did the windshield or whatever, or I guess like the back one, whatever, like the car window anyway. And it shattered in a way that looked a little sugar glass. Like, I don't know what sugar glass looks like, but it looked like it shattered in a way that was meant to not shatter into pieces. You know what I mean? So, but it still cut him up because it's still glass. You know what I mean? Anyway, but either way, I don't really care. Fuck that shit. And people that are that fucking butthurt over a fucking chair spot that you know nothing about truly, like, I don't know, man. Go touch some grass or something, you know, like Jesus, like, but QT maybe should go to some fucking, what do they call those? When someone sends some sensitivity training, you know,
don't respond like such a dick. Oh, yeah. No, I was just, I remember thinking, like, come on, man. Like, I
he always comes off so badly in those threads.
I respect you backing the company, but dude.
I know, yeah. There's backing the company and there's being a dick, like you said. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, like, there's two ways you can go about it, you know? And he chose the low road, in my opinion. But either way.
Yeah.
Let's get into my favorite. We'll talk about this a little bit less since I did just kind of ramble about QT for a bit there because I was a little butthurt, you know, but.
It's all right.
You
know, hey, we're allowed to. It's our fucking 100%. Show.
Yeah. This podcast is 100% feeling, you know, it's what I'm feeling in the moment. And that was a little exchange I had on Twitter last night. I deleted my tweets, like I said, but, you know, the sentiment is still there. You know what I mean? Like, let me pull up my notes. I don't know why I didn't have them pulled up. And let me actually fix my mic really quickly. All right, there we go. It should be sound a little bit better now. I think I sounded like I was in an ocean there for a little bit. But yeah, let's get to it. We are talking about Hologram versus the Beast Mortos from Collision. And Hologram fucking is kind of like a fucking basically already like baked fucking put together ingredients and fucking
he's catching fire.
Package. Oh yeah, he's hot. He's hot right now. And I knew he was hot because as soon as his name came up and the little music started, which by the way, I think they redid the entrance a little bit after like last week. I said I liked it, but I feel like they could do a little bit more with it. You know what I mean? Like there's opportunity with this character because he's got this like hologram thing, so you could do some sci-fi shit. You know, like. And I think this time it came a little bit more together, and I do think he's gonna piece it together more over time, right? You know what I mean? Like what this entrance is gonna be. And they may even change the music, which might actually be I don't think the music is bad or anything. I think it's good, but I think if they did something that fits, like really it's like kind of like electronic and like maybe a little bit like, you know, dancey, you know, and he could like kind of like fucking go down to the ring like a badass, you know, and like it could vibe like how like, you know, a luchador comes to the ring and they're like running at full speed and then do like a front flip into the ring, except we don't need to have Hologram do that if they can't. No, they're not necessary. Though if they can do that, it'd be sick, although they're going to get called, you know, discount Sin Cara, but you know, but what either way, you know, because that's wrestling fans for you, because they can't see anything twice and it ever be anything different than what they first saw, you know. But man, I'm in a bad mood today, apparently. But anyway, yeah, so let's talk about Hologram. I actually really enjoy Hologram as a wrestler and God, just a brilliant decision to put in Beast Mortos, who I think is starting to finally get some like recognition backstage. Like they're like, yeah, this guy, we knew he's good, but this guy now is like, we're gonna throw him against random people and see what happens, you know, like. And dude, the thing that I was actually really fucking excited for about Hologram was basically as soon as the match started, he was getting fucking chants, dude. Like they're chanting for Hologram already, and this is week two. You know what I mean?
A great, great sign.
Immediately the crowd is behind this guy, and I gotta say, you know, I think that this was a very brilliant decision for two reasons. So in my head I'm like, when they first start wrestling, I'm like, what, Hologram's not doing Hologram stuff like last week? And then it fucking hit me, Charlie, there's a reason for this. It's because they wanted to show off what he can do as this person that sells and what his comeback sequence is like. And I was like, wow, we're seeing his fucking repertoire here. Okay, so then I locked the fuck in. I was like, okay. And I gotta say, he delivers on that part. And Beast Mortos delivers a beating in this match, and it's fucking pretty brutal. But in the end, the comeback that Hologram ultimately puts in is very, very well put together. And his fly, again, you know what? He might have to be tagged up with Commander if they're going to do a tag team with this guy at some point, because they have such unique, like, styles. Like the way they float and fly and flop around is so much different than other wrestlers that I feel like, I don't know, like, I just want to see them. Maybe they need to face each other first, but like, I really am like, you know, like, now imagine if you gave this guy like 25 minutes or 20-ish minutes in a match, like, and just let him go against somebody like Ray or Will or somebody like that. You know what I mean? Like, just let me know what you were thinking about this. I really, really am impressed with Hologram so far. I think it's hitting for me in all areas. The only thing, like I said, I wish the music was like just a little more exciting, but that's not a problem. It's working as it is. But if we could just get like a fucking banger theme in there, this thing would come together really nicely, I feel like.
Yeah, in a matter of a couple, like the two shows we've seen of Hologram, he feels important. He feels like a big deal. And I'm fully behind him now. I think this is something. God, I it's been a long time since I felt like this way with an AEW talent that I really wasn't too familiar of before. And they gave him the video packages. They gave him the, you know, the vignettes for a few weeks. He arrived in 2 weeks now. He's getting the crowd behind him in every match that he gets. So yeah, that's a good sign. And I'm hoping beyond just the esports arena where they're at, he still comes across as much of a star. Back-to-back weeks now of Beast Mortos matches as our favorites, right? It's he as well. It's just so much fun. This is the kind of match I look forward to when we hear it advertised on AEW television, straight up. I look forward to these matches. I thought they had good chemistry, and at the end of the day, it was just a cool fucking match. And it worked for, me, brother. Yeah, let's get into... We got a little bit of news, and
well,
then...
Before we do that, though, yep. I do want to ask a question to the audience really quickly. So we did our poll last week for what the... What was our poll last week? I forget. It was the Ospreay versus MJF is the best match in AEW television history, which unanimously we got the answer that we both said ourselves, which was yes. And since we're talking about Hologram, and I mean, you know, is... I'm trying to think what's a good question to ask about Hologram. I guess my question to people is, I guess it's just a, you know what, let's do a vibe check. How are you guys vibing with Hologram? Are you guys feeling Hologram so far? That's just, I think that's a valid question.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems a little, you know, easy of a poll. But to be honest with you, I feel like it's valid because we feel a certain way. And y'all know that that's what this podcast is all about. Like I said, it's how we're feeling, what we're thinking. I want to know what you guys are feeling and thinking, too. That's why this whole poll thing is so great, because make sure you go to Spotify or wherever we post the polls. We do it on Twitter as well.
Yeah, Spotify and then our Twitter, that Eat Sleep Elite.
Let's get into
news kicking us off. We got a couple of wrestlers going to the various tournaments around the globe. Up first, we have Anna Jay. She was announced for Stardom's 5-star Grand.
Now that is a brilliant choice.
Yep. So she is headed to Stardom for the month of August. Pretty much she'll be gone the whole month. And... yeah, I honestly couldn't think of a better wrestler to go to Stardom right now. She's in the same block as Starlight Kid and Sayuri, so it's like, it's pretty cool. I think
this is the biggest opportunity, honestly, Anna Jay's ever been. Championships, whatever, fucking matches, but this is the biggest opportunity she's ever been given in her career to improve, like 1,000%. You know what I mean?
You can learn a lot even in 1 month.
Yes.
So...
bro, look at what Anthony Green has done in the last couple of years. The guy's like regularly booked on the indies now when he could barely get booked before. Like he was getting booked so infrequently, even after appearing on American television, that like, well, I wouldn't say infrequently. He was probably getting work, but he wasn't getting recognized despite being as good as he was. So he just went to NOAH for a couple of years. You know what I mean? And now he gets booked all the time on big shows. You know what I mean? So like it's a smart move. If it's good for your career, look what it did for Jack Perry. Fuck.
And then we have the infamous 20-man tag team match in the CMLL Grand Prix. We have Team Mexico versus Team World. And this week we've had two members of AEW announced to Team World, including Kyle Fletcher and Claudio Castagnoli. So, and Mansoor as well. You know what? Mansoor is officially all elite, so he was also announced. They're on their team. They got
the license. Get the graphic this week?
Did they what?
Did MXM get the graphic like when they appeared this week? Or
I don't know, but I saw something with them and AEW. So, I mean, Tony Khan said he touched tips with
the fact that they appear. Oh, well, that's fair. But to be honest, if he didn't sign them to a dual contract, I would be shocked. You know what I mean? Like, given the fact that he's using them in ROH, yeah.
I think Tony Khan can get along pretty well with these guys.
It may just not be official. Like, they may have signed them to Ring of Honor and that they're working out the AEW deal. Because, I mean, I would assume, like, for some people, they want those to be, like, you know. Like, if you're going to do some, or maybe it's, I don't even know how that works. I would be really curious. See, this is one thing I wish I knew a little bit more about, the contracts with AEW, because with WWE, it's usually pretty straightforward. You're just saying, okay, we're going to wrestle for this amount of time, this many dates, you know what I mean? And you're going to maybe win a championship. Sometimes I feel like that gets probably negotiated in there, you know what I mean? Like, but like, I have no idea if championships are part of negotiation. But I assume, like, while you're negotiating, you can be like, hey, well, I won a championship in this period, you know? Like, and they'll be like, yes or no, you know what I mean? And that can determine how much you decide, you know what I mean? Like, it matters to some wrestlers, obviously. Look at CM Punk, you know what I mean? Like, but no, I mean, like, I don't know, like, I mean, it's so cool to see AEW wrestlers wrestling in international matches, though. I got to be honest with you. It makes us feel like more part of the wrestling community because it does feel like these events go on all the time and AEW kind of gets left out of them a lot, you know? Like, I don't know why that is.
It's really neat to see Takeshita getting the reaction he is in the G1, too. So it's shit like that. It just makes me so happy.
Japanese wrestling fans know him and want him so badly for their company, and they're trying to make that happen. And look, dude, what do we know about Japan, Charlie? They watch, they listen, and when the crowd reacts to you, they want you, especially right now. He's a Japanese guy, and Okada just left, well, a while ago now, but, you know, Okada's gone. There's no one really stepping up. They're trying to make a star out of Zack Sabre Jr., but, I mean, you know, it's a difficult process to do in New Japan from scratch with even somebody that's been there for a while, you know? So if you have a tailor-made star, I mean, I have to think they're going to make that move if Tony Khan just doesn't immediately re-sign him or he doesn't go back to DDT. You know what I mean? Like, if those two things don't happen, New Japan is making a move and they're offering this guy a bag.
100%. So a couple of follow-ups on some injuries. Sky Blue, she was set to undergo surgery for her broken ankle.
Employ Dr. Kyle.
Yep, employ Dr. Kyle. And then Dalton Castle, just to follow up on what happened to him, he's out of action with a torn biceps. And then someone else that's been taking some time off, John Moxley, has been given time off from AEW. I can't think of anyone more well-deserved.
Yeah, bro. Bro's been needing his time off for like 2 fucking years or something like that.
Yeah. Updates on some contracts.
Oh, you know what? I wonder. Renee's not been around either, so I wonder if they both took the time off.
Probably, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. They should spend some time with their... They have a kid, right? They have a kid, I think. And yeah, they have a child. They should spend some time with their child and themselves and... Like you said, John Moxley, who is given more to AEW than John Moxley? You know what I mean?
So this might be one of the fucking scariest contract status updates we've ever had on our show.
Bryan Danielson's contract expires before.
That is a big deal. And hopefully that's something that we can cover. And that, you know, hopefully doesn't impact the Wembley match, right?
Let's keep it a buck. We know Bryan Danielson. We know Tony Khan. Between the two of them, we're going to work out the main event happening, even if Brian wins, even if he's leaving the company. That being said, every indication we have been given so far by both Brian and by AEW suggests that Brian wants to be with this company long after this contract is over. Brian Danielson in recent interviews has said that his mind has changed since the last times that he said the stuff like that. He is not feeling the same way he did when he wanted this contract to be his last contract. What that means is up for your interpretation. You know, it could mean that he no longer wants to wrestle or wants to still be involved in the business like he did. If that's the case, that might spell the death of AEW. I'm not even going to lie to you, because that is a very bad indication if that guy is saying that, you know, essentially. That is not what I think the case is. I think it's more likely that he wants to continue to wrestle longer, because I don't see what has happened in the last year that would make him so drastically angry or so drastically disillusioned with the business to just step away. So I think even if he's not wrestling at the rate that he is now, we're going to get a few Brian matches a year, and Brian's basically going to become the guy that runs the show backstage for Tony, I think. Because I think he's basically probably doing that now, is what it feels like, to an extent. Certainly it feels like, especially on Dynamite and Collision, he's very involved, you know, like, yeah. I have no proof of that, but that's what they say, is that he's involved backstage in agenting matches and stuff like that. Right. So like,
yeah.
And he's definitely a linchpin for advice for a lot of the roster, I would think, you know? So like, I think no matter what happens with Bryan Danielson, whether he wins the championship and walks away, I don't think he's going to take it to WWE. He's not fucking CM Punk. You know what I mean?
Oh, Jesus. No.
He respects both companies too much to ever do that. And that being said, if he decides to walk away and go be with his family, then he's given us more than we could have ever asked for and ever really deserved as wrestling fans, probably ever since he came back and ever since he's been in AEW. So if he never wins the championship and drops it to Swerve and puts Swerve over as the next great wrestler from his home state, and that leads into Swerve versus Darby with extra emotions because Brian immediately announces retirement afterward, and now there's a fucking void in that part of the country for who's the best wrestler now that's ever come out of here. Now Brian's said and done, who's going to be the one to step up to fill that legacy, you know? But I gotta say, Brian owes us nothing. If he decides to wrap up his career and fade into the background, it's not like he's going to leave our memories and our minds anytime soon. He's been the greatest wrestler to ever do it. He's going to stay with us, and I don't think he's just going to walk away from AEW altogether. I think he loves this shit too much.
Yeah, and that wasn't even the contract I was talking about. That's just another one.
No, I knew you weren't, because we didn't talk about the Brian thing at all. Like, but I saw the Alvarez clip the other day and I was like, is that real? And apparently it is.
Yeah. This one is definitely more.
To be fair to you though, I did all that drama right there. It's probably just storyline. We're just being honest. Yeah, like he's probably going to keep wrestling after this. It's what everything has been suggesting. But to be honest with you, AEW loves to mix real and story, so how much of it is real? We saw what happened with MJF's contract.
Well, yeah, you could tie that in with this too. So this is definitely more of a future one, and this is a contract that, as of right now, it's Daniel Garcia.
So I saw this discourse, and I was like,
there's no discourse. He doesn't have a contract right now.
So he's not under any AEW contract at this point. He's just doing per appearances.
So here's the things. Here's what we got. When they did the angle, they were aware that he may not come back. And so the angle was done in case he doesn't come back. And if he does come back, then they've got a storyline feud with MJF. That's what came from Alvarez. And then I know he had been thinking about it, or he had told people he'd been thinking about what he was going to do, which he should do. Check with both sides or whatever if your deal is coming up.
Yeah, that changes the context of that match so much now because of the way that they wrote him off TV. I could just leave it and he never comes back. That's kind of insane.
Yeah, he said, I don't think it's 100% that he's coming back. I will say that, but I don't think that he has re-signed or decided to leave, but that was one of the reasons that he was taken out in the storyline. So then Ibu had responded to that. He said, because someone was asking Ibu of WrestlePurist if he was hurt. And he goes, it's fine. He said he is fine, Daniel Garcia, that being. The company's protecting themselves while he hopefully dots his I's and crosses his T's. If he stays, he's jumping into a feud with Max. If he leaves, then he was ricocheted. They'd like him to stay and feel that he will. So Ibu, of course, usually is pretty good with AEW.
Is there a real scenario where Tony Khan wanted Ricochet and Triple H said, give me Daniel Garcia?
No. Just because of the independent contract situation, I don't think they're fundamentally could.
If they're both about to come up for contracts and they both are interested in going to the other place, I mean, that's not tampering at that point, I don't think.
Well, if that is the case, Triple H wins by a mile because Daniel Garcia is still only 25. Daniel Garcia is the future of this business. And if he goes into that fucking NXT, this will be, I kid you not, I think the biggest fucking loss they've ever had in terms of a fucking, this would be just under if MJF left. Like, MJF, I think, might be the only person bigger that they could lose that is a core, fundamental person of the future of this company. It's MJF, Will Ospreay.
Actually, if Jack Perry walked, it'd be pretty bad, too.
Yeah. It's other than the guys that have been world champions, Daniel Garcia, who's younger than all of them, it's like, this would be a fucking, this would be the biggest gut punch to date. Bigger than Cody. Bigger than CM Punk, who got fired. Because those guys are, look, the Cody Rhodes thing's still fucking crazy. He was an EVP. I understand that. But if we're talking the future of this company, Daniel Garcia easily could be a wrestler for the next 15 years. It simply doesn't compare. Another contract, we have Buddy Matthews. He had signed a contract months ago, and it was described as a very lucrative deal. So
it wasn't a long contract, and it was for a lot of money. That's not a good sign.
He said, regarding stories this week about Buddy Matthews signing a new deal, we've been told that this was agreed to months ago. He had tried to give notice at one point, but AEW wasn't going to release anyone to go to WWE. Tony Khan, since then, offered him a new, very lucrative deal, and he agreed to it. So, they kept him in.
So, this sound like Buddy is basically out the door, though, which sucks.
He was, but now he's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless they do something.
I'm sure he signed.
They should really, if they really don't do anything with the House of Black this year, like, and by that I mean, like, they had, like, 2 years ago, they had to run as champions, right? I think it was, like, 2 years ago. Anyway, something like that. And if we don't get some kind of action with them, I would be not surprised if this was his last contract. Because just given that, you don't really hear stuff like that that gets out. Especially if it gets resolved like that. I feel like that's not good that we're hearing that. I basically had to just, you know, bribe him to stay, essentially. Like,
just was able to bring him back. MJF is defending his American championship versus Michael Oku at a Rev Pro event.
Okay, we're going to have to watch that match.
Yeah, and then he's also defending his title against Templario at an Arena Mexico for CMLL. So MJF is taking his American championship around the world. Good for him. And then that's it. So I'm tossing the keys over to you where you got ROH Death Before.
Yeah, good old Death Before Dishonor. All right. Lots to talk about here. I don't have anything written down from the pre-show. If there was anything on it, I could give a shit. Being honest. Yeah, sorry. I did not watch the pre-show from Death Before Dishonor. Sorry. I didn't even watch the post-media scrum. I might watch that later, but
the biggest news thing that came out of it was, I think, a glimpse into what Ring of Honor might be called in the future. And it was Tony Khan saying he knows that Ring of Honor would be catered, people would care more about it if it was titled AEW Ring of Honor. I think that's a glimpse into the
move.
Future.
Probably a smart move. Yep. And then it would make the contracts a little bit more clear that if you're signed to Ring of Honor, you are also signed to AEW.
Correct. Yeah.
That would.
I think that's a glimpse into the future.
That could suggest a merger of the two companies too, like fully, because I do think they are considered separate right now. The way he bought it, you know what I mean?
When AEW gets on that streaming service, they're gonna want, if you can bring in that Ring of Honor fucking, you know, it's just another.
I mean, it could be the bonus. Thought could be, well, we already have this streaming service. Maybe we just put some money into that, upgrade it to be our own thing, and then we could sell that as a property to somebody like they did with the network and the WWE. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the WWE Network made them a lot of money too. So if they were still doing their deal with Bleacher Report and they were also streaming on an exclusive platform, I mean, think about the fucking attention that would give you for Max. You know what I mean? Like, so, but they may not be wanting to do that. Because the thing is, and I've said that before, why doesn't Tony Khan just launch his own streaming service? He has Honor Club, right? He did that. But the thing is, Honor Club's not competing with anything that anything he's going to be, you know, potentially a part of. He does that with that, then there are going to be people that would have bought Max if they put it on there or something like that. You know what I mean? That will now just buy the streaming service for Tony Khan, you know what I mean? So he can't really compete like that, you know what I mean? Like, he can't do that necessarily. I do hope we get there eventually. Not being able to go back and watch certain matches that I hear, like, fucking lore about, you know what I mean, is so frustrating sometimes, you know? Like, but it is what it is. But yeah, like, I guess it's cool that Ring of Honor still feels like it's kind of semi-exclusive thing, you know, to an extent. But it does limit the amount of people that are interested in it. I think, oh my god, my mic is freaking out. Give me 1 second here. Holy shit.
All gooch.
All right, there we go. Anyway, so yeah, we opened up the show with the Beast Mortos taking on Commander. And I was writing my notes. These are the kind of matches that can easily get a guy like Mortos over with the Ring of Honor crowd. He's got really excellent timing. And I got to give Commander a lot of credit here, because similarly to how Hologram in the same manner had to against Mortos sell really, really well. Obviously, Commander's pretty good at that. So, you know, somehow Commander manages to somehow still this at point. Excuse me. At this point, still Charlie. Do stuff in matches I don't think I've ever seen a luchador ever do before. Like, just his fucking spots and his timing and his, like, his way he floats through the air. I've talked about that. The first time I noticed the way people float through the air was with Dante, you know what I mean? Because Dante literally fucking levitates, you know? Like, I don't know what that fucking kid puts in his Wheaties, but I want some, you know? Yeah, and so yeah, good stuff there. Did you have any thoughts on, Commander's use in Ring of Honor? I'm not really sure, like, this match was really that consequential, but, like, yeah, do you think that there's, like, a possibility that we're just not using him in the right way sometimes?
You know, he's one of those guys I wish would be featured in consistent storylines on the television and not just random matches, but I do think...
Do you think he just can't communicate properly to the audience?
Ring of Honor, it's just, they just don't have the, you know, the fuck. They just need to get a more concise story, you know, honestly.
I don't know who's the person that's in charge of, like, all the stories in Ring of Honor. I would assume it's Tony Khan overall, but, like, I don't know who's, like, figuring that out. Whoever that is just needs to sit down with Commander and be like, what do you want to do with your character? Because I feel like that really hasn't been done with them. Maybe it has, but... And if he is just, like, sort of out of that Rey Fénix, like, cloth, you know, where he just wrestles really good and there's not really much to him beyond that, fine. But that's not really ever really worked to get the Lucha Bros over, unfortunately. The thing that's gotten them the most over is Penta being an absolute fiend as a fucking demon, you know? So, yeah, I mean, whatever. Good stuff. We had something I've been fucking waiting for all month, Charlie. Fucking MXM debuting on the Death Before Dishonor show. Who come out and they're like, yo, we're fucking cool. Look at us. I'm Mason Madden. I'm Mansoor. And we're the MXM Collection. And we want to debut on Collision. And we're calling out FTR. And I was like, shit, we're fucked. Everything's fucked. Burn all the fucking, you know, buildings to the ground because we're fucking rioting. This match is going to slap. And it did. So, yeah. But just fucking so excited when I saw them out there. And then, you know, just fucking... These two are going to be so fucking good on AEW and Ring of Honor, bro. It's not even fucking funny. Like, this is one of those things that, like, it made sense for Tony Khan to get these guys when they were out there, but it almost made more sense for him to let them cook on the indies for a little bit because it got this fucking group of people. Because they just, them showing up on Collision, they knew who they were already. And that is fucking huge because these guys were known when they were in the WWE, but they just didn't get that fucking push because I don't know why. There was just like some fucking brick wall in their way. You know what I mean? Like, and they would do little things with them here and there, right? If I remember correctly, but they would never fully pull the trigger on these two, right? Even though they were so fucking over with the audience, like, which classic WWE there. But I don't think that's going to be a problem here in AEW. We may have a misfire at some point where they should maybe win something that they don't, or and then they try and run it back later, like with the Acclaimed. But I don't think we're going to get the Acclaimed syndrome here. I think they're going to know what they have in these two. I think they're already more over than like a lot of the fucking tag teams, Charlie. It's kind of insane. Like, certainly in Ring of Honor, but even in AEW to an extent.
Yeah, I think people just naturally care about them.
They're a couple of fucking hot dudes, you know what I mean? Fellas. Some fucking good-looking fellas. What have we here? All right.
Hello.
But yeah, we had the conglomeration of Kyle O'Reilly and Tomohiro Ishii taking on the Kingdom for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. And Charlie, I just wish I remotely gave a fuck.
20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, the match was fine. The Kingdom always deliver matches. Like, I don't ever doubt that they're going to do that. You know what I mean? I just don't care about this title reign.
Yeah.
I do think Kyle O'Reilly likes taking, like, epic bumps, bro. He's like, bro, can I do that? Like, can I, like, fly off the top rope and, like, you know, land on, like, a fucking table, like, 3 feet over there? Like, yeah, sure, fucking Kyle, why not? Okay, you want to die? Go for it, you know? I feel like that's Kyle O'Reilly's personality when they're booking out matches, you know what I mean? And if you go back to all the Undisputed Era matches, he was always the one taking the fucking super mega destruction spot. You know what I mean? Like, guy just has problems. All right. But you know what? He's not like Darby Allin or anything. Like, Darby Allin literally throws himself through glass. You know what I mean? But whatever. You know, like, didn't Darby Allin, like, intentionally crash a fucking car for, like, a fucking video once or something like that and not even tell Tony Khan he was about to do it until he was on FaceTime telling him not to do it?
Something like that, yeah. The guy's a fucking animal.
He is amazing. Anyway, yeah, but I do think, like I said, the match got there in the end. And I did write this, and I think this is indicative of a lot going on weird in AEW right now. I still think this is a better pay-per-view match than Kyle had with Roddy. And that is fucking wild to think. But I think it still is, you know? I think this got further than that. I don't know what it was about that match that we didn't like. Maybe we should go... This is why I wish we had the streaming. Because maybe if we watched it again, we wouldn't feel the same way. Like,
possible.
But we don't get to know that because Tony Khan hates us. No.
Khan!
Not really. If Tony Khan hated us, he'd cancel our podcast. But yeah, and I guess... The thing that really took this match out for me, though, was fucking they had the Don Callis family get involved to help the Kingdom retain. It's like, fine, you know. Diamante. Let's talk about a match that actually I want to talk about. Diamante took on Leyla Hirsch in a Texas death match. This didn't even last 3 seconds, Charlie, before fucking Diamante was chucking Leyla Hirsch off the fucking stage. Like, holy fucking shit. This was fucking, like, this is literally... Yeah. It is really cool stuff. There was a thumbtack chonkla at one point. That was pretty insane. And, you fucked with the fucking wrong lady when she's pulling out the fucking thumbtack chonkla, you know what I mean? You're fucked. All right, fuck. All right, what else happened to this match? Oh, yeah, there was a fucking really funny spot where Leyla Hirsch got stuck in some duct tape tied to the ropes for, like, way too long. But it kind of was funny because they just kind of, Diamante just kind of started to go, oh, I'm just going to grab stuff from under the ring. Do, you know, like, oh, well. It didn't change anything in the match. It was just kind of funny, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, God, no. It's like MJF's fucking jacket again, you know what I mean? It's winning. It's got her in a wrist lock. No, you know what I mean? Like, We had two double crimson masks here. It was a plunder fest of the best kind. And this is probably one of the best finishes to a Ring of Honor, like, extreme match with a moonsault through a duct taped a Diamante on the table. And it looked like Leyla got a little fucked up in it, possibly. Hope she's okay. Layla's been a little injury prone. Not that that's a bad thing. It's out of her control. You know what I mean? But I really hope that she doesn't get derailed by this. I don't think she was actually hurt. I don't think we probably would have heard about that by now. But maybe she, like, probably stung for a couple days, I would think, you know. But it's one of those spots that really early on we identified with Leyla that moonsault was going to be a big thing that she could hit in certain big spots. And they took advantage of it here, Charlie, I think. And
yeah.
Yeah, so just really good stuff there. All right, I'm going to speed through some of the rest of this. I did actually want to talk a little bit about Wheeler versus Lee. The main thing I want to talk about is this has been a long time coming for Lee. He needed to win this championship for a while. It feels like, I mean, it's been, Rick Abani has been saying it for like 2 years now. This guy's been tailor-made for, well, not 2 years, a year and some change, you know what I mean? That this guy is tailor-made for this division. This is the championship that this guy can take to the next level. STP has been, I think, needing some validation in the form of gold. I assumed it was going to be Shane Taylor with the TV title at some point, and we could still get there. But the fact that we got there with Lee first, I feel like actually is a really, really good sign for STP.
God, I hope so. I'm with you.
Lee Moriarty is so talented, and he is, to me, if you look up and down the roster unless you had Brian do like some sort of like inverted storyline where he becomes Nigel. This is the closest to Nigel McGuinness on the AEW Ring of Honor rosters right now. And he's the one who defined this championship. And I think Nigel, if they're smart, they'll have him show up a little bit for a Collision so that Nigel can talk about his matches. Because I think Nigel will be able to sink his teeth into what Lee's about to do with this championship. I think the match, I'll talk about why I think that is. So one of the things that defined Nigel McGuinness's electric run as pure champion was him using the rules of the matches to his advantage to both cheat and get away with it and also force other people to lose points and stuff like that by forcing them to cheat to try and keep up with him. And he would also end up winning with like a really, really fucked submission, like in the ropes after he exhausts all your rope breaks, or he'd pin you under the ropes after, you know, a similar situation. You know what I mean? So that was sort of what they went for in this match with him and Wheeler. Wheeler, in the pre-promo for this, was like, bro, I couldn't even beat you in 10 minutes. That makes me feel like basically like a bitch because I'm the champion. I'm supposed to be the man, and I couldn't even get it done in 10 minutes. You know, like, and so he's already walking in lowered confidence. You know what I mean? Lee's riding the high of having his number, and that's basically the story that you get here, was that Lee was so fucking talented that he was the one guy that Wheeler could never beat if he tried, you know? And that's a fucking great way to elevate a guy right there, especially with how established Wheeler is. I do wonder sometimes if the rest of the audience feels the same way about Wheeler we do. Like, do the Ring of Honor audience probably? Yeah, because if you looked at that crowd, they loved everything that was happening on the show, you know what I mean? So these were the hardcores. I'm just really excited to see what they do with it. You know Shane Taylor is going to be talking all the shit now that Lee's got a championship, so. But yeah, I mean, do you have any thoughts? I mean, obviously we've been talking about Lee becoming champion for a while.
It's very nice to see Lee get this gold, and hopefully... Again, hopefully, with him being a champion here, we can see just what it's like with him as a champion. And, you know, and they actually book him like a champion, and he doesn't disappear for months on end from the show. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm probably more optimistic than I fucking should be, but... Yeah, I really hope it all works out for him.
All right, next match. Billy Starks took out Red Velvet. That's actually not what happened. Billy Starks took on Red Velvet for the Ring of Honor Women's Television Championship, sorry. And first things first, let me fix my fucking mic again, Jesus. All right, okay, it's wanting to be a bitch. Hopefully it just doesn't sound terrible on the podcast.
No, that sounds good.
Okay.
You sound great, yeah.
It's in my ear, though, so it's really distracting. Give me 1 second. It's going right.
Giving you some back.
Yeah, anyway, so first thing of note, we had some Deadpool and Wolverine costumes here, buddy. Oh my God, did that pop me after I fucking saw that movie, buddy. I was like, oh hell yeah. And of course, Billy Starks is fucking Deadpool. That just makes too goddamn much sense. And, you know, I could see there's a little bit of Wolverine and Red Velvet too, you know what I mean? I could see it. I could see some adamantium claws coming out of them, you know? But, she'd be definitely way more X-23, though, than actual Wolverine, obviously, you know? But I could see her throwing. I could see her killing Juggernaut.
I could see it.
Spoilers. But fucking Christ. All right, there we go. Fixed it. All right. So basically what I wanted to add about this was cosplay was fun. They had some really good exchanges. Billy attempted to run back the same plan as the first time, and it backfired. And your new champion, Charlie, Red Velvet. I did not see this coming this early for Billy. I'm surprised they put it on Red this soon.
So happy for her.
Yeah, it's so great for Red Velvet. It's a validating moment for her, it's got to feel like, right? Because she's been grinding in the AEW women's division pretty close to the beginning, you know what I mean? And just never really been given that opportunity, you know?
So, Billy's title reign, to talk about it, it's a little weird because she was champion for 112 days.
Never defended it, though, right?
She defended it one time on PPW.
Yeah, she never defended it on Ring of Honor. But she was on the show every week, so I can't complain about that. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's not like the title doesn't feel important. It's just she never really got a chance to defend it.
I do think that is a massive wasted opportunity to never have her defend it once on TV. That is bold.
Pretty wild. Pretty wild.
That's how good she is, too. But maybe they felt like they missed the opportunity to put it on Velvet.
Either way, I've really been into what Queen Aminata and Velvet are doing, and they're kind of their duo act that they got going on together. So I'm in.
Yeah. It would have made more sense to me if they did something else later, but whatever. It doesn't particularly matter. They don't need to do that all at once. Either way, the next match I did not agree with at all. It was an eliminator match to get the right to fight for the six-man championship on a different show, on a pay-per-view.
Pretty fucking ridiculous.
Von Erichs and Dustin Rhodes won this. I did not even pay attention to this match because why the fuck would I?
Yeah.
Anyway. No need to. We had a really, really fun matchup next. Survival of the Fittest Ring of Honor World Television Championship. Leo Rush versus Atlantis Jr. versus Shane Taylor versus Lee Johnson versus Johnny TV. God damn, that's a lot of bodies. All right, yeah. A little all over the place. Not as good as the first one, in my opinion. Still a fun match. Eliminator matches are my favorite thing to play in fucking WWE 2K. Let me tell you, they're fun. You get like 8 people in the ring and it's just like a 30-minute match where everyone's just getting eliminated, bro. That shit's fun. You know what I mean? So our 6 participants all got some really good stuff in here. When I believe it was when Shane Taylor and wait, who was the got the meat chance? Was it Shane and who was the other? Wait, am I missing? I didn't write somebody down. I'm tweaking. Who was the other big guy?
It was Shane, Brian Cage.
Brian Cage. Sorry. You know why I didn't write him down? Because there's nothing that will make me block something out of a match more than Brian Cage being in it. All right. But yeah, so Brian Cage. We got some meat. We had a meat chance. We're kind of all around the place this week. But it was fun for that. There was like a bullshit 3 count that they didn't call, but I don't really care. Like, who fucking cares? Ultimately, if I remember correctly, Atlantis does retain here, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is just setting up for the match with Kyle, obviously. You know, big win. Get him on the pay-per-view. Feels nice to have it like an international champion in Ring of Honor, but also I do wish we saw him a little bit more. And we had a really epic intro for Athena versus Queen Aminata for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship. It's just a knockdown, drag out, like snatch and bald action is what I wrote in my fucking notes, you know. Yeah. Hard hitting, personal fight, you know. Athena's still the masters of the stairs. She is the stairs master, dude. I don't know when this gimmick that I came up with for her being the stairs master was a joke at one point. She is the master of the stairs spot at this point. No one else has ever done it better. Like, just unbelievable the run of matches Athena has been on, dude. Like, the greatest Ring of Honor title reign ever. It's not even a question anymore. Numbers can be bigger. And she may never pass the longest title reigns ever, and that's fine. This is the greatest Ring of Honor title reign that's ever happened and probably ever will happen, honestly. We're watching history right now. Like,
it's going to be hard to top this.
The only way that I think that you could have made this better, Charlie, is if Queen Aminata won this championship, which she does not. I got to ask why, because it felt like it was time, you know?
I can tell you exactly why. I do agree. But I think they're going to have Billy beat her. And I think that's the full, you know, full storybook ending that they want with this title is for Billy to beat her. And I think it would look good to have your first television champion then go on to win the world championship. Look, it looks good in the optics. And I think that's the story that they want to tell. And when she kind of started burying her in the post show, and she only says Lexi's the one that helped her, and she doesn't give any credit to her, I think they're going full-fledged with that route now.
Color me interested. Oh, Jesus Christ, because that's something I've been asking for a while. I still think Billy should have won it at Final Battle last year. But yeah. That's, you know, we talked about why we ultimately agreed with that decision at the time anyway. So go back and listen to that review if you like.
I would love Queen Aminata to win it, but yeah.
Yep. And that was Death Before Dishonor. And then I'll just speed through regular Ring of Honor really quickly because it's literally nothing of consequence. I don't think... Here's what I'll do. I'll just really quickly look at it. And if I see anything worth talking about, I'll do it. Mark talked about Face and Roddy. Nothing there. The Kingdom got told by Paul White. Okay, Paul White got added to the board of directors for Ring of Honor. That is significant. That is a significant cool thing that happened on Ring of Honor. Let me fix my mic again. All right. Mike is really slowing me down today. All right. Yeah, Lee got some stuff with Claudio. Stuff. Just pay-per-view setup. Alexi. Interview the number one contenders. We had a plug for Death Boris Sonner. Angelico and Serpentico were on the mat. We're in a match with the Gates of Agony. Still don't have any idea what they're doing with Gates. Got nothing for you. John Cruz worked double duty on this show. Oh, okay. This one I actually wanted to ask you about. EJ Nduka. Nduka. How do you pronounce that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Former Nduka. Defensive end. I remember hearing about this guy. How did he not make it? Why did he not end up making it in football?
I have no idea. And you know what? It sounded like he was linked to Swerve there for a little bit, and I'm guessing just never ended up happening. But hey,
if they're going to use him in Ring of Honor, though. He very rough around the edges in terms of wrestling, but they can teach him. There's like 57 wrestlers in the back. They can teach him, you know what I mean? And I'm sure he's getting trained. But he's got the look, and he's got the size, and he may have a little bit of charisma in there. So hey, you're never going to hear me complain unless he starts sucking really bad. So, you know.
Yeah.
We got the announcement that MXM were going to be at Death Before Dishonor. Johnny TV and Shane Taylor took on Leo Rush and Atlantis Jr. This is basically setting up the history between Leo and Shane, which they may play into at some point. They did it Death Before Dishonor, but they may more so like in the future. Abaddon was back. They took on Dolce Tormenta. According to Paul White, this is his favorite wrestler. Quick win. Yeah, Iron Savages, challengers kept making statements, pay-per-view cards, you know, Dark Order were on the show. Not really anything significant. And yeah, it's just a win for the Von Erichs. Probably this is a match that got them into the number one contenders match. But again, why are we doing an eliminator match for... Okay, this is the we had three matches this week that were eliminator matches that were supposed to be title matches, essentially. But they just didn't want to actually do title matches for whatever reason. Like, oh, I guess the one they needed to come up with contenders because they didn't have any champions. But like, Christ. Anyway, you know. Yes, that is all of Ring of Khan.
Ring of... All right, we let's get into AEW Dynamite Blood and Guts. Marvez is in the parking lot. Osprey jacks his car. Cheerleaders are in the arena. MJF hits the ring. He does some classic MJF shit talking. He unveils the American Championship. Chance of USA goes on. He does his normal shtick. Osprey hits the ring. They set up that they're doing their match at All In. We go backstage. Rendsburg. This is when Matthew Jackson rigs the results. Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki for the FTW Championship. Okay. If you like chop matches, this is the match for you. Because I think they chopped each other for 10 minutes in a row. No exaggeration. This was strong style to a T. Minoru Suzuki chopped him so bad, bleeding out of his chest from opening chops. And yeah. Pretty much Jericho just hits a low blow and a Judas effect for a win after about 10 minutes of that and little shenanigans in the ring. Post-match, Jericho poses with his belt. Big Bill and Brian Keith hit the ring. Shibata hits, Shibata's music hits, and pretty much I think that's setting up that next match. Willow gets jumped backstage by Chris Statlander, want that title. Renee is interviewing Danielson, and he said the doctor said for the moment his neck is fixable. If something happens, he just wants to enjoy the moment. Jared interrupts, said he was crushed that he didn't win the Owen Hart Cup. Danielson is the perfect guy to win it and fulfill his destiny at Wembley. Jared said Swerve knows exactly what he needs to do in order to retain his title. Jared said Danielson can have one foot out the door if he's going. If he can't have one foot out the door if he's going all in, go all in. A lot of people believe in him. Jared being at the very top of that list, and yeah, it's cool.
Shoutouts to Jeff Jarrett for. Oh, let me fix my mic. Shoutouts to Jeff Jarrett for taking this babyface energy that he got from the Owen Hart tournament and running with it and using it in a way that is benefiting somebody else on the show, like Brian. I mean, think about it. That's pretty powerful if he thinks that he can help Brian right now with what he was able to do with that match.
Absolutely. It is. It's very nice to see. Dr. Britt Baker submits Hikaru Shida to pick up a victory. This is another chapter in one of the best women's rivalries in AEW history, for sure. And Baker had a little bit of ring rust, but I think that's to be expected after how long she was gone.
Probably had to relearn how to wrestle, let's be honest.
Yeah, probably a lot of it, yeah. And really fun finishing sequence. Post-match, we continued the Mercedes Moné story, where she debuted Camille, who's someone that we've covered for months on end, that we're just kind of waiting for her to show up.
Bro, and remind me, up. Correct me if I'm wrong, we started talking about this back in like February or something, because you'd realized that she would have been like...
She signed was in February,
yeah.
So...
Yeah, so there you go.
So she's finally shown up, and... Yeah, she's going to be the heater for Mercedes. When we'll see where that goes, because maybe Jamie Hayter returns and is the heater for Baker. And maybe they do a little fun there. So, who knows? The story can go many ways.
Hey, fuck it. Throw both of them on the show.
Yeah. Pac defeated Boulder in a very,
what is the
very
way we say, Charlie,
squash.
Fuck it. We're going to kick the bucket, you know?
Yeah. This is a very quick squash. He hit a brainbuster and got the big win. The Glamour, Mariah May, defeated Caitlyn Alexis. She beat the piss out of this poor girl. Oh my god.
It was like week one Mariah out of her. Beating her up. Beating ass.
Timeless Tony's music.
Beating ass, serving face.
But it was a ploy. Someone appeared behind May, ripped off the wig. It was Tony Storm. Oh my god.
Tony Storm looked like a goddamn fucking villain from a Marvel movie when she showed up. What the hell?
She did. She got the microphone. She yelled at May, if she's prepared to die, because she is.
I just knew when they fucking did this feud finally that this was going to be when she went full bore with the fucking, she's going completely over the edge at this point, you know what I mean? And she is just fucking gone. honestly, at this point, if Toni Storm never goes back to regular Toni Storm, it'll actually be better. Like, not like that if she stays like this, but if she stays with a little bit of that edge of craziness in her a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, that would be, one, it would feel right, you know what I mean? Like, this is just a little infection. Like, every now and then it comes out of her, you know what I mean? But, like, it's not like a regular thing, you know?
Could be fun. So, we had a Rampage, Royal Rampage.
The Royal Rampage.
We open up the match with Orange Cassidy, Claudio Castagnoli, Brody King, Commander.
By the way, shout out to this match somehow always being good, even though it's the weirdest gimmick match of all time on paper.
Yes.
It's on paper, it's so weird, but it actually in the ring works out so well. It's weird. It's like a double, almost like a double gauntlet match.
Yeah. Entrant 5, we had from the represented the conglomeration, Tomohiro Ishii. Entrant 6, we had Brian Cage. 7, Butcher. 8, Daddy Magic Matt Menard. 9, representing the Undisputed Kingdom, we had Roderick Strong. 10, Kip Sabian. 11, Brandon Cutler. From the Patriarchy, Nick Wayne. From the Conglomeration, Kyle O'Reilly. Jeff Jarrett, Matt Taven, Jay Lethal, Mike Bennett, The Beast Mortos. Entrant 19 being Darby Allin. Entrant 20 being Leo Rush. Darby Allin goes on to win the match, hitting a coffin drop to cause Castagnoli to fall to the outside to win. So, yeah. This year's World Rampage will be a world title shot at Grand Slam. So it is not the title shot at All Out. But Grand Slam, that'll be a fun show.
Makes sense for Grand Slam, you know. And that'll be a big match for Swerve, obviously, if it's Swerve that has it. If it's Bryan Danielson, that'll be one of the biggest matches in AEW's history, straight up. Like,
be pretty nuts.
Especially for a world title. But I don't, you know, we're not pre-predicting like that. So, we don't know. We don't even know if Brian's going to resign. We don't even know if his contract's really up. We don't know if his story.
Darby have a beautiful story, too. So
They even hinted at it last week. I mean, they I do wish they had pulled back on the Darby stuff a little bit, because it is where my brain immediately goes now. It's thinking he's probably going to win that when he's in this match, you know what I mean? Because it just makes so much sense for him and Swerve to face a Grand Slam, you know? Like, because you assume that if Daniel is going to come back, that would probably be where you run the match with Max, right? Like, or at least he should maybe shows up there to attack Max. That would make a lot of sense, you know?
It is. It bugs me a little bit that back-to-back years Darby wins this. But again, it's because of the people that haven't won the world title and the ones that aren't, like, supremely obvious, Darby is the one that's got the best shot at winning.
I feel like he's in that supremely obvious category, man. I got to be honest with you. I think he's going to win it. He probably will win it.
He's not as obvious as Danielson or Ospreay. And those are the only two in my eyes that are in that category right now.
Oh, I can tell you somebody else I think is going to win that world title sooner rather than later. I think, honestly, dude, I think that there's a legit realistic possibility that Daniel Garcia, if he sticks around, could win that title. I'm not even kidding. Like,
he would, yes. I just won't see it anytime soon. But, again, I thought the storyline with MJF and him was perfect, and, you know, we'll have to see where it goes. Of course, Statlander quickly defeated Layla Gray. Haven't seen her in a long time. Lance Archer defeated local talent. The name is not even on here.
Bro, I'm convinced Layla Gray gets booked when we accidentally mention her on this podcast as an example of a bad wrestler. Not even kidding.
Backstage, Saraya and Harley Cameron were getting interviewed. Saraya said she'd be in action next week to prove why she deserved to be in the ring at Wembley, all in London. We had an absolute shit show fucking match.
Legit question. Are Pac and Saraya making the card? Are they just, like, if they are, just start building something up. Fuck it.
I don't know how Saraya does. I don't see how she makes the card right now.
And why are we wasting time on this?
I don't know. Look, 0 hour. Look, there's options, but clearly. I mean, no, everyone should want to get on it. It makes it feel more important. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with them giving it time. Because we need the wrestlers to feel like, you know, not to just say, oh, it's WrestleMania, but we need the wrestlers to feel like this is WrestleMania. You need to be on this card. Willow has been upset that she wasn't on last year's card. We need to carry that energy, you know?
I agree.
Don Callis' family, Roosh and Kyle Fletcher defeated the Outrunners, the Righteous, and Private Party. Absolute shit slamming of a match. But yeah, the Don Callis family are reigned on supreme, if you will. Let's jump over to Collision, where we were yet again back in Arlington, Texas, in the eSports Arena.
Collision, which, you know, didn't start off fucked at you know? It's not like we, for the first, like, 5-7 minutes of the show, had, like, no audio, you know, and then we got some audio, but then we had no commentary. Bit of a shit show to start this fucking Collision. Is this still part of the Summer Series show?
Yes.
So that might be why. That explains a lot, because maybe not every time that you set up in the same building is it going to be exactly the same. I mean, maybe it should be, but I mean, whatever. It shit happens. Though this was embarrassing as fuck. I'm not going to... I'll just keep it a buck. Like, this shouldn't be happening, you know? Whose job is this? Don't know, but they fucked up. Because they're supposed to test that shit before you go live. You know? But whatever, you know? I'm sure they... Orange Cassidy took on Johnny TV at the start of the show. And basically the gimmick here is Orange Cassidy is basically just too cool for Johnny TV's bullshit. He picks up the win. So basically the only thing that was of note in this match, he tried to do a gimmick infringement with the glasses, and he then reversed that into theft of the glasses. So don't fuck with Orange Cassidy's glasses gimmick. He'll take your glasses. Damn. And they basically, this was all just centered around playing into the mixed tag event AEW put. What was that show called? I don't even remember. It was like the Battle for the Booty or something like that.
Some bullshit, yeah.
And which I think Willow and Orange, I believe, won over these two. And so they beat them up after the match. Johnny TV beats up Orange, and then Willow makes the save. So yeah, I did not care about this whatsoever. Juice was loose backstage with the guns and has vowed vengeance upon the patriarchy for cheating them out of the championships. So, you know, I suppose we'll get that at some point. I mean, to be fair, the patriarchy is being targeted by, like, just about everybody right now. So,
yeah, this felt like a complete babyface.
Yep, no, they definitely feel like they've gone the other way. I assume when Jay comes back, he will also be a babyface. Jay's been running as more or less a babyface for a while anyway. Like, he's been so over since before the MJF feud. That's, I think, why people wanted him to win so badly, because they thought, this guy's so over right now. MJF's had his title for forever. It's the end of the year. It just makes sense, you know what I mean? And then Adam Cole. But you know, whatever.
Adam Cole, bye-bye.
Which I'm not going to ever complain about Adam Cole, like I said earlier. Just, you know, misfire. It is what it is. Tiger Style, Lee Moriarty, and Brian Cage. Excuse me, Top Flight. So they said this reasoning was because Shane Taylor couldn't compete. I'm assuming that's a shoot. I'm assuming he was supposed to be in this match, and they just said, well, we need a big guy, so Brian Cage. Or they just planned this the whole time, and they just wanted to sell the match the night before, which is possible. I could see that. You know what I mean? They took on the Blackpool Combat, Claudio Castagnoli, and I believe it was Claudio and Wheeler, correct? I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Yeah, no, wait, the other two weren't on the show.
Kind of a mingling of our Ring of Honor feuds here.
Yep, a little bit. Some, you know, get some stuff in. Like I said, overall good stuff. Good to see Lee this soon after he won the championship. We got some more meat chance here. And I think, you know, this matches the quality of the rest of the show. You know, the matches all pretty much got there, I think, you know, for the most part. Darius ended up eating the pin on a seatbelt pin combo from Wheeler. So, you know, no win for the new champion, but which is a little bit. Oh, I forgot to mention Top Flight are also in this
match. The boys.
But they also, they didn't, and this is going to sound insane. This is the first time I've ever said this about Top Flight. They did not stand out to me in this match, which they always do. So that was kind of wild to me. But what, they stood out when they got pinned. That's when they got stood out. Conglomeration were backstage. They've had Willow sort of semi be a Conglomeration member. They still haven't added Willow, I don't think, officially. But,
no. They added Film Hero, so.
Yeah, that's true. And they also added in this segment, they added Lil' J. So there's a little nice moment. That baby looked terrified to be on television. But Mark Briscoe's the fucking goat, man. I can't be mad at him. So we talked about Hologram already. Like I said, I thought this entrance really nailed it this time. Thunder Rosa took on Maya World, and very solid performance. Dominance from Thunder Rosa. She called out Deonna Purrazzo again here, so I guess they're just never going to not be feuding with each other.
Yeah. Maya World, she trained by Athena, and yep. She was very highly rated in the PWI Rookie of the Year race last year. So
yes.
Good. Cool to see her. I've never seen her wrestle before. This is cool.
Oh, really? You hadn't? She's been on Ring of Honor.
I do not remember if that's the case.
Oh, okay. Well, I've brought her up a few times. I tend to try and give her credit. Hey, who knows? I could be partially responsible for her getting this opportunity. I'm not going to take that credit, but you never... But... Because I don't believe that this podcast has those kinds of numbers to make those kinds of moves. But, I mean, you know, maybe fucking somebody listens and they're like, hey, look at this fucking podcast. You know? Anyway. Lance Archer called out Will Ospreay for jumping the line in the next title match for the American Championship. And it's like, now you must face me and I will murder you and I will send your soul to hell and you will become your soul will be redeemed by the devil, you know, or something like that. So Will has to defeat the forces of evil to make it to MJF. I mean, that match should slap. They usually had good matches in Japan. So, you know, Lance Archer can be a little bit. Not perfect sometimes. Like, he, you know, that one time he was facing Eddie Kingston and like broke his fucking neck, you know, that was pretty insane. But, you know, like, I don't know if he broke his neck, but, like, landed directly on his head. And we were both at the time, like, did he just? And we were like, you were like, ah, probably not, right? That looked like, you know. But then it was definitely, I think they ended the match, didn't they? Like, it was bad. But, you know.
So,
yeah, that was one of those few times where they actually straight up just ended the match in AEW. You don't see that too often. The most recent example was Sky Blue, you know what I mean, with, against Hikaru Shida. Usually, people try to finish the matches. Though, my personal advocate, I would personally advocate for them not if they're really hurt, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't want to aggravate your injuries and put yourself out for longer for a win or for a loss even, you know what I mean? Like, so even if you think it's really important to getting somebody over, it's like, is it worth your health? I don't know. But I'm not a wrestler, so I can't fully understand what goes into making that decision for somebody. You know what I mean? I've never been in the ring. I've never had somebody's career on my shoulders or on my back. I've never been responsible for making sure somebody else can eat next week. You know what I mean? Like, so you know, either way, you know, yeah, so we had Ishii, Kyle, and Mark take on the Premier Athletes, Daivari, Josh Woods, Tony Nese. No sauce. Chris Jericho talked about his broken finger and how badass Suzuki is and wanting to fight him again eventually. So we'll probably get that as either a pay-per-view pre-show match or a pay-per-view match. Possibly. Probably not anytime soon, though, because Suzuki usually will show at the AEW for like a couple matches and then go off, do some stuff in Japan for a while, and then come back a few months down the road. Lance Archer sent a man to like he said he was going to do to Will Ospreay. All right, we'll talk about this for a second. MXM had their debut against FTR. So a couple of things off rip. Tony Khan scouted Mason Madden for the NFL draft.
That's a beautiful touch.
Beautiful. It's like this has been
so
this,
cool.
It's like it makes it feel like Tony Khan is this guy's biggest advocate from day one before he was even in wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, even if that wasn't the way that Tony Khan saw it at the time. Who did he even, so my question is this, did he get drafted at all, or is it just he was going to potentially get drafted?
I believe he did get drafted.
So let's see, if the Jaguars drafted him, that would be
incredible.
Round 3,
pick 89, so yeah.
Who was the pick? Who picked him?
He went to the Houston Texans.
Okay.
And it looks like he was on the Jaguars practice squad in 2015 for a little
bit. Tony Khan did get this guy on the team. Okay. I mean, not necessarily, I don't know if he runs the practice squad, but you would think he'd be involved in that process being the scouting person, you know what I mean? Or being a scouting person.
He went to wrestling about a year later once he got fired, once he, you know, NFL kind of dipped out and there wasn't a lot of the other leagues that there were.
Bro, I would not put it past Tony Khan to have suggested he go into fucking wrestling, dude. You know what I mean? Like, honestly. Because he was already probably, like, interested in wrestling at the time. He just wasn't doing. That's cool. It's so cool. It's just like you know, all lore is lore in AEW. Even fucking not wrestling lore. It's so cool. You know what I mean?
MXM are a hoot.
Oh, yeah, bud. Dax the Axe and Cash were both having some fun here, bud. Cash just looks like, I always love watching Cash's reactions to stuff because, like, he, you know, when he gives these little matches against people like this who have the fun gimmicks, he just has a fun time.
He has a good time with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you can tell Dax does too, but Dax also has just got such a serious tone and expression to everything he does that you want him to be like the straight man of the joke almost. You know what I mean? But with that time when he does join in, like when they touch tips at the end, like, and Dax is the one to initiate, you know what I mean? You know, Dax just knows. He may not understand, and he may think it's a little weird to do the whole, oh, we're touching tips, you know what I mean? Like, oh, the dick joke, you know what I mean? But, like, Dax understands what it means to the wrestling fans.
Can't go wrong with a good dick joke.
100%. MXM is basically one long dick joke. Hey, yo. But, fucking, and by the way, I guess I must not have really ever paid attention when he was in the WWE. Mace is fucking, or I should say Mason, but I'm going to keep calling him Mace because I feel like they should just call him Mace anyway, even though he's Mason, because it just sounds good. I used to hate that name, but it actually kind of works, especially if his name's Mason, you know what I mean? Like, but Mason's fucking yoked, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, he is.
He's
yeah.
a fucking, that's a slab of fucking meat right there. And Mansoor oozes fucking charisma, dude. Holy shit. That guy's got it coming out of his fucking ass. He might have to play a Deadpool variant at some point. Holy shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
For real. He's got that. You know what I mean? He's got that energy. This is good old fashioned tag team wrestling, man. There wasn't anything crazy in this match. They didn't do any fucking high spots, really. This was just good tag team wrestling. You know what I mean? They just did wrestling moves and they did stuff and it was about catching your opponent at the right time. And I put this in my notes, Charlie. FTR is still your most potent weapon to get people over with. 1,000%. The only, and then the next thing I wrote in my notes is the only more potent weapon than that is when Mace throws his ass at you. You're fucked. Good luck. Tony Storm might have some fucking competition there. Holy shit. That thing is a fucking deadly weapon. It needs to be registered. And that thing, guy's kind of fucking stacked back there, too. I'm not going to lie to everybody. Like, goddamn. You know what I mean? I'd fucking do that move if I looked like that too. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is this. I feel like if they're not over with the crowd after this, it was the crowd was already reacting to them. But like, I just don't know how you couldn't. Mansoor was caught by the Shatter Machine, but they did end up touching tips, so they acknowledged that they were a good team. So I think this only spells good things for MXM. If this is just like they wanted to debut them to the crowd, and they're not going to use them regularly on AEW, they're going to go be over in Ring of Honor for a little while. This is a great way to introduce them to your crowd. You know, and I'm really excited to see what MXM are going to do going forward. All right. We cut to backstage. Damn, we're almost at the end of Acclaimed. The Acclaimed were talking post-match about Blood and Guts. Basically calling out everybody that's calling them out lately, saying that they suck. That's been us, so let's listen to what they had to say, Charlie. They said that FTR and people like that aren't real wrestlers, you know, and they're willing to die for AEW, basically, you know, and that it's time to nut up a shot.
Charlie heard up Anthony Bowens here.
Oh, yeah. Max Caster also sounded like he was ready to run through a brick wall. So, you know, I'll give him that. He had more energy in here than he did in most promos that I've seen from him. He's got good promos. He's just, he can be very much, I don't know, I don't want to say it's the same or the generic or anything like that's not really accurate. It can just feel like he's just, you know, he knows he's trying to get somewhere and he's just trying to get there. You know what I mean? And it can feel not forced. I don't know what the right word is here, but I think you get what I'm saying. Like he's just, sometimes you know what you're going to get from him and you get that. You know what I mean? And that's fine. He doesn't need to. I look to Bowens when I want them to cut like a fucking world changing promo. You know what I mean? Because he's really good at it. I still think about the scissored party or the National Scissoring Day promo that Bowens cut. One of the greatest that he's ever cut. You know what I mean? Leo Rush took on Pac in a dream match. This is honestly, Charlie, this is basically like, I mean, we often have talked about on this podcast over the last 2 or 3 years about how we are some fucking fiends for some 205. Yep. And these are two 205 Live guys that did they ever cross paths? I don't think they did.
I don't think so.
If they did it one time right before Pac left, you know what I mean? Because Pac left right before the Cruiserweights really even kicked off in the WWE, you know? Like, he was the thing that kind of made them even viable, you know? Like, so the fact that we're getting the guy that basically made that division and the guy that basically saved that division, you know? I mean, that title still exists now, and I don't think it would without Leo Rush's title run with it, you know what I mean? But I think that going to be one of those matches that you look back on and you're like, damn, that was so good. How did I just like not like pick that for my favorite? Or how was that? Because it was good. They did some really good stuff here. This is kind of like the blueprint in my mind that I had for Leo when they brought him back. The rumor right now is that he's doing a long stint in AEW right now.
Yep.
Like that he's going to be on pretty regularly for some time in the near future. And so if that's the case, give him all these matches because he will deliver on them. And he did. Pac is obviously really fucking. And yeah, like I said, it's just a missed opportunity from the cruiserweight era of WWE that I'm so excited that we got to see. Nigel McGuinness was proving he's the master of plugs during this match. There was a slam here sign and Pac said, oh, okay, I'll put that on the ground, and then did not slam here. That is a crime, sir. You did not slam. But yeah, this is what I was getting at is I think Leo's current wrestling style that he's been wrestling since he left AEW and really while he was there doing the whole Man of the Hour gimmick, but he didn't really ever, you know, never got to full realization. The style he's been wrestling of this just, I don't even know how to describe it. Just go watch the Super Juniors tournament from a year ago, or was it 2 years ago? Whatever, it was a year ago, I think, yeah. And it's every fucking match he's just delivering and it's over the top and it's insane and it's athletic and... And he does that again here, and it sucks that he had to lose here, but I understand why, because they're trying to chart a path for Pac to Wembley, and unfortunately it had to go through Leo Rush, and that's okay, because Leo isn't an established guy right now, he can take these losses, and if I know Leo Rush, he's going to take that, and he's going to use that as his motivation for whatever he's going to do going forward. So, not like in like real life, I mean, this is character, you know what I mean? So... this is all working out fine. As much as I hate him losing, because I'd love to see him go on a streak of wins right now, it's all gonna come full circle, I feel. So, but like I asked earlier, I think he's gonna make what they've been focusing too much on him. He's got to make Wembley at this point, right? In some kind of match,
yes. In some way, he has to. Yes,
and I think he has to win too. It has to be a big win. I don't know if it has to be for a championship, but it should be something. Maybe you put him in like some kind of death match, maybe not a death match, but like something like that, because I feel like he could do well in that scenario. Fuck it, he's jumping off of Wembley Stadium. No, he's doing a black arrow off of Wembley Stadium.
Fuck it,
yeah. Into the Thames. No, I don't even know if they're near the Thames. Whatever, fuck it. But yeah, so Warpath to Wembley is a go, and that takes us to Battle of the Belts, which I could give zero fucking shits about. I'll be honest with you.
So Tony Storm defeated Ty Valkyrie in a world title eliminator match. Willow Nightingale defeated Deonna Purrazzo in a CMLL Women's World Title Eliminator match. This is Battle of the Belts, by the way. Yeah, Eliminator matches. Got it. And an ROH World Six-Man Tag Team title that is a thing again, suppose. Dustin Rhodes and Von Erichs, the new champions. Maybe, just maybe, those guys will actually be on Ring of Honor. However, this is a legacy of what has been the Battle of the Belts. This is the most forgettable one ever.
Yeah, I have been on record for the last, like, 6 months or something like that with Dustin Rhodes saying he needed to win a championship before he retired. I'm glad that he did. I'm glad that he did.
Same. And you know what? I like the story with the Von Erichs. I dig this. I am excited to see what they do with this on Ring of Honor.
Was there a part of you that was like, are they about to just throw it all on the King? There was a little part of me that was like that. But the Von Erichs just felt like too right.
I felt like, with how much we know Khan likes to get on his you know, happy feel-go-lucky moments, this was one that I felt like.
Oh, and I think he knew when they did this that everyone was going to come out from the back and congratulate the Von Erichs. This was basically, this was to me, this was Tony Khan saying to the Von Erichs, I've seen what you guys can do. I've seen what Kevin has been teaching you. I've seen what your wrestling creators have been teaching you. You are, we want to invest in you. Stay in AEW Ring of Honor. And I think the fact that they, Charlie, that they won these championships, I think the Von Erichs are ours. I think we've got the Von Erichs. I think that means they must be under contract, you know?
And here's to hoping Ring of Honor is truly something special going forward. Like, not special, but
these guys have the capacity to do it. What they've done in the short amount so far with the Von Erichs makes me think that if they're smart, they can do something with them on Ring of Honor that could be meaningful. But we'll have to see. And I think Dustin can be a huge key in that because he's very good at cutting promos. So he can very much carry that load in a similar way to how Daddy Ass did for the Acclaimed for a little bit, you know, while they were still finding their footing as champions. I think that we can have a similar thing here. And Dustin could talk all the shit because now he's got a championship. So
absolutely. And looking forward to next week on Dynamite, we got first time ever match between Hangman Page and Darby Allin. We got Will Ospreay versus Lance Archer.
How has that match never happened? That's insane.
Yeah, it's one of like, I fell down a rabbit hole the other day. Let's see if I can quickly find it. Okay, so there a rabbit hole of the OG AEW one-on-one matches that have never happened. You ready? Hangman Darby. Hangman MJF, Hangman Orange Cassidy versus Darby.
Like that one needs to happen. We've talked about that one before. That one needs to happen.
Darby versus Eddie, Eddie versus Hangman, Perry versus Hangman, Perry versus Moxley, Perry versus Orange Cassidy, Kenny Omega versus Darby Allin, and Kenny Omega versus Eddie Kingston.
Omega versus Darby Allin could genuinely be one of the greatest matches of all time.
So those are like some of the kind of OG one-on-ones that have never happened that
There's pretty crazy matches in there, and that makes me so confident that we're just going to get some of these randomly on a TV like we are like this week. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
and when they announce it, it's a big deal. Just 100%. Like Hangman Page versus Darby Allin. When they announced that, I saw it fucking literally everywhere. CMLL Women's Title Eliminator match, Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander. That should be awesome.
You know what this tells me is that CMLL is clearly not okay with them having her defend this championship. What the fuck?
No. No, they're not. Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, and Tomohiro Ishii, the conglomeration, versus Roosh, the Beast Mortos, and Roderick Strong.
What a team.
Hey, yo. Brian Danielson speaks live. Mercedes Moné and Camille appear, and Mariah May has a sit-down interview with Renee Paquette. Looks to be an awesome week ahead. We had a fun week here today. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we'll catch you next week for some Eat Sleep Elite. And if you are interested in our Deadpool and Wolverine coverage, again, Eat Sleep Elite Fantasy. If you just type that in, honestly, you might just see it under this podcast. So we talk a lot of science fiction there. House of the Dragon is the latest show, and we covered The Acolyte, The Boys, you name it. So, yeah, if any of that interests you and you enjoyed hanging out with us, because I think at the end of the day, it's what these podcasts are, right? We're all just hanging out with each other. So thanks again, everyone. And here's to hoping Ring of Honor this Thursday is the best yet. Hope springs eternal, motherfuckers. Wardlow, bring us home!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.